Media Masters with Paul Blanchard.
Welcome to Media Masters, a series of one-to-one interviews with people at the top of the media game. Today I'm joined by Ewan Vinnicum, editor of Blue Peter, the world's longest-running children's TV programme. A lifelong fan of the show and a proud recipient of one of its sought-after badges when he was just 6 years old, he started working as a runner on spin-off show Re-Peter in 1998 and has recently overseen the programme's 60th birthday celebrations. An advocate for children's literacy, he is also a judge on the Blue Peter Book Awards, and his favourite book is Danny, the Champion of the World. Ewan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for asking me.
So tell us, let's start with the Blue Peter 60th anniversary in October. I mean, that must have felt like an incredible moment.
It was amazing, and I say this to lots of people that I wrote on the back of an envelope what I wanted the show to be like in my dream scenario, kind of one night in my kitchen at home. And then a couple of years later, it kind of all happened, but it was even better than the envelope and all the plans that we had, and the team were just brilliant, and everything seemed to come together in a brilliant way. So we had like past presenters, we had great films, so we had like HMS Queen Elizabeth, the aircraft carrier, spelling out Blue Peter, which was brilliant because we asked the MOD to do that and they agreed to it. And it was quite an interesting set of films because the weather was bad. It could have gone so wrong, but just that brief moment happened and we got it on film. And then we had Lindsay going in the birthday balloon over the Arctic Circle that a kid had designed. And that was probably one of the most emotional filming that we did because just so many things went right, so many things went wrong. But in the end, it went so right when you actually saw it and saw the pictures. And it was just amazing to see one of our competition winners' designs floating over the Arctic Circle in Finland, piloted by a Blue Peter presenter who never knew how to fly a balloon 4 months before that point. So it's one of those kind of shows. And then we had our diamond badges, children applying for all their diamond badges for the special diamond year. And they had to design these little diamonds, which then we put all over the studio. And one of my big things is I always say you've got to really respect kids. And so if a kid sends in something to Blue Peter, I say every diamond had to be on the show. And so 24,000 diamonds were actually on the set of our 60th show, because I thought then if I was a kid at home watching it, and because I was a badge winner and when I was six, it's just those details that then you can say to every child watching and all the parents, like, we've put every diamond up. And then we had like Sophie Ellis-Bextor performing, which was great for Janet Ellis, because she obviously is her mum. And then we had Harvey and Jonas Blue performing with the Philharmonic and all those collaborations. And then the Vamps did an amazing performance starting from one studio with the Philharmonic and then running into the Blue Peter studio. And just so many things. Ed Sheeran got a gold badge, so all these plans just all seemed to come together. And then the explosion, like that the Monday and Tuesday night were just brilliant, because Monday night we had the one show and Matt Baker presented a special with past presenters, and then Sunday we're on like Radio 1, Radio 2, Radio 4, Radio 5 Live. In the morning we're on BBC Breakfast, Good Morning Britain, Lorraine, like everything, just every local radio station. It was just one of those days where you do have to, I said to the team, these are the days that, this is why working in media is brilliant, and these are the days just to mentally note things down, because actually these will be your memories for the rest of your like media career. And it was just the day could not have gone better for me. And when I woke up on Wednesday morning the day after, I was like, yeah, the team, like, we've done it, well done.
And Blue Peter is so beloved by so many people. It's such an integral part of everyone's childhood in Britain, including mine. You know, I always remember Simon Groom and Janet Ellis and Goldie and all of these kind of things. It's just incredible.
See, I think we must be a quite similar age, because I'm like 41, and it was like Sarah Green, Simon Groom, Peter Duncan, Janet Ellis were my kind of presenters. But obviously I watched everyone after that, but that was my first experience of Blue Peter. And it's just the show, it evolves, and everyone, I said to the team, like, everyone's going to have their version of Blue Peter. And Tony Walsh, a poet from Manchester, did a lovely poem about Blue Peter. And he said, like, everyone's got their own version of Blue Peter. And we were trying to, with the 60th, in homage to the past, but not to be stuck in the past, like, bring the show still to its current audience, but just have moments of reflection. So if you're watching it and you've not watched it for years, you can be like, oh yeah, they've still got that, they still do that. But actually, it's in a digital world, it's still relevant to children and things like that. So, yeah. It's one of those jobs where you go, when I got the job, it suddenly dawns on you that you're in charge of this amazing, amazing show that has lasted so long. And to do it in the 60th year as well, we were just like, it's humbling to think that I and the team are running that show at the moment. But It's just brilliant. It's the best job I've ever had in telly.
And did you always want to be editor of Blue Peter? Because I know you wrote to the show, you've brought the letters into the studio. Actually, it's incredible to see them. But, you know, you've clearly been a lifelong fan of the show. Is it, you know, the almost a cliche to ask, but is it the dream come true to edit the show that you've been such a lifelong fan of?
So I was always a fan of Blue Peter, but I think the fundamental of Blue Peter is I love live TV. And so Blue Peter in children's is one of the last like live TV shows that we've got. We've got some lovely Saturday morning stuff as well, Saturday Mashup at the moment on CBBC. But just that live choreography of bringing, you've not got a show at the start of the day, and then by the end of the day when you go live, you've brought contributors in, you've got the films ready, you've got children in the studio, you've got the pets, you've got everything together, and that choreography is brilliant, because then you go at 6 o'clock when we finish the show on a Thursday, everyone's like, yeah, brilliant, we've done another show, and it's like that celebration moment. And so I always loved those kind of moments. So actually, early on in my career, I was obviously a runner on Repeat, which was a behind-the-scenes show for the 40th. Then I went off and did Saturday Mornings and did like Live and Kicking, and that I always loved Live and Kicking shows. I always loved Noel's House Party. It was like anything live, because I just thought that is the thing.
Noel's House Party was one of the best shows on TV ever. I used to love it. Just MTV, do you remember when you just because you click, and then
because it was just like you were watching it as a viewer going, anything can happen, and MTV would be sitting there going, are we going to have it
about
this week?
About 5 minutes before every MTV, I'd you know, furtively scan my own walls to see whether it was about to be me.
And it's just it's just those live moments, I think, should be cherished. And so what's, like with the Blue Peter editor job, I never thought I'd be the Blue Peter editor, because I'd worked on Record Breakers, I've worked on Springwatch, I've worked on loads of different shows. And then in 2007, I just finished Springwatch, and then the Blue Peter studio producer came up. And my boss said, oh, would you consider applying for it? And I thought, actually, this is the first time I've ever been thinking of doing Blue Peter. And I thought, oh, it's live TV. Of course I want to do it. And so I got that job, and I did that for 2 years, and it was a brilliant time. Quite a transitional time for the show, because Connie Huck left after, she's like the longest serving presenter. So she decided to move on after 10 years. So she'd done a really good job beating Val Singleton to the longest female presenter of the show. And so she left, then Gethin and Zoe left. And so then actually at that time, then Helen Skelton, who's Helen Skelton, one of the like brilliant Blue Peter presenters that started and doing all those challenges. And she's gone to the South Pole. She's tightrope walked across Battersea Power Station. She's done ultra marathons, like 3 marathons in 72 hours. Like, it's just like such a brilliant Blue Peter presenter. So it was her, Andy and Joel. That was my second year at Blue Peter. And then I went off to run, be the head of presentation, which is the running the presentation segments, so the bits between the shows for CBBC and CBeebies. And then one day my boss said, the editor of Blue Peter's got an attachment, which is in the BBC, where you can go and try out different other jobs and stuff like that. So he went off to go and do 5 Live. Because he'd always worked in news, and so he went back to news for 3 months, and they said, would you babysit it for 3 months? And I was like, yep, I'll do that. And then 3 months turned into 6 months, turned into 9 months,
so
turned into a year
at that point.
Yeah. And so I was doing the presentation job and Blue Peter all at the same time. And then 2.5 years later, after doing those two jobs and looking after loads of live TV, because obviously presentation is live with Hack of the Dog and the CBeebies Bedtime Stories, things like that. And so then I decided just to focus on Blue Peter. And then we suddenly thought, oh, in a couple of years, it's like the 60th birthday. Wow. And then it suddenly dawns on you. And only on the birthday day, it suddenly dawned on me that, oh, I'm the editor on the 60th birthday. And it said that I had a moment when a kid talked to me about something which really just blew my mind, made me get, not too emotional, but really just made me think, wow, this job. And then the live show happened. And
do the viewers have multiple touch points in a sense throughout their life? Because you could watch it as a child, and then when you become a parent, watch it with your own children, and after 60 years, I dare I say, grandparents as well with their grandchildren.
Yeah, what was lovely about like this 60th year? So we started a year before the actual birthday, because I wanted to do like every month something big for Blue Peter. So it was kind of, we gave Mary Berry a gold badge in October. Then November we had Children Need and Big Bring and Buy Sales, and we did Strictly Blue Peter and things like that. And by doing all those individual moments of reminding people of the past and the present and the future, we suddenly got all these letters from grandparents and parents saying, can you please tell us that we still watch the show and we love it? And the diamond badges, children had to do a memory mission that we got, where they had to find out something about Blue Peter from someone who used to watch Blue Peter. And so we had loads of stories coming through, which was lovely, because then you'd be like, yeah, I can actually remember the Romanian orphans appeal, or when the team raised money for lepra. And they, you know, like, all the different bits were coming through. And then we even had, so I won my badge when I was at the Liverpool Garden Festival competition in 1984. And we had other top runners up contact us to say they'd won their badge then. So I was like, give me their number, I want to phone them and just say I was one of those kids then as well. So it's just, it really did bring everyone together. And we had people in the studio on the live show with their grandparents or their parents going, I'm a badge holder, they're a badge holder, and now my grandchild's a badge holder. So I think it's just that cross-generational moment, which is just lovely, because it just, I think, brings families together and everyone remembers their Blue Peter.
And actually, talking of Blue Peter badges, I know that cheaters can buy them on eBay and, of course, they're meaningless. But if I wanted to genuinely earn one, how would one go about acquiring a Blue Peter badge?
So, Paul, I'm not commenting on your age, but if you are over 15, then you can't apply for a Blue Peter badge. You have to be between 6 and 15 to apply for one. If you're above that age, then what you can do is if you appear on the show as a contributor, or you do something important for Blue Peter or help us out with something, then often we award people badges. So it's mainly
like an honorary badge.
It's on-screen contributors that get it when we start filming. So the team, they're very prized possessions, and the team, we check them out and we check them back in, so we know exactly how many badges are being awarded to on location shoots or in studios and things like that. Because I always
it's
say
like
to the
armed
team,
police then when they have to check out their clock and then get back in always, and everything. I've seen the bodyguard.
Yeah, it's Blue Peter badges. Just that, I always think that is such a core element, and it's probably the biggest element of the show, because presenters can change and evolve and things like that, and the studio can evolve and the films can evolve. But actually, that badge is the main connector that we've got with our audience. And once you're in that, and I always say, like, to Blue Peter, we are the biggest club for children in the UK, because we've got, at the moment, there's just under 200,000 children who've got at least one Blue Peter badge between 6 and 15. That has grown from about 40 or 50,000 in my time to 200,000. That is amazing growth. And it's just, you don't want a child to go, you're devaluing my badge, because actually they're so proud of their badges. And when you see on social media parents taking photos or schools taking photos and going, oh, we've got another two green badges today in the assembly. And I've been to assemblies to surprise children to award them their badges, just in case they get, if people get in touch with me, I'm always like loving to meet the audience. And you just have those moments where you just go, yeah, it's still that opening the letter. Every child who writes to us gets a personalised letter from me, so no two letters are the same. We've stuck to all the principles that Biddy Baxter and Edward Barnes and Rosemary Gill created back in the day, just because we value that, because that's why it's been successful, and that's why you've got memories of Blue Peter and everyone wants badges, because actually they are still that prized possession and the care and attention. And we've got kids who've got multiple badges now, like, cause you can get a blue, a silver, a green, a purple, an orange and things like that, but they collect them all, and now they just want to collect them all. And we do have a flurry of 15-year-olds who are just on the cusp trying to get them all before they can't get
them.
They're
no longer eligible.
Yeah.
So the Blue Peter that I remember growing up and think very fondly of, compared to the Blue Peter today, what's still the same and what's different?
It's the same show, just in a different times. So for us, or for my generation when I was watching Blue Peter, maybe pop stars were the biggest celebrity or the biggest contributor you might have into the show. We might have vloggers, because children today love vloggers. So we might bring a vlogger in.
It's another world. You are making me feel old now.
And they are their celebrities.
Isn't that amazing?
Children still love animals. So we still cover animals. We still cover making. And people think, and there's so many stories where they go, oh, Blue Peter's got rid of makes and bakes. We haven't got rid of makes and bakes. We still make stuff. We just make things that are more applicable to children nowadays. That is the one toy that they all want, or whatever we're just reflecting children's lives of today, like in our day when it was like Janet and Sarah Green and Peter Duncan, they were reflecting our lives at that point. So the life in the 80s was reflected in 1984, just like I'm reflecting in 2018 what children are interested in. So the core pillars of the show don't really change. So we still do the things that... So we still do location films, we still do big challenges. Like my presenter Lindsay at the moment for Children in Need has just taken part in a swim run where she's had to run over 30 miles and swim over 10 miles. You know, so they're still doing these amazing big challenges. Like Radzi skydived with the RAF Falcons, which was, for me, I can remember as a kid in my town at home, like where I grew up, seeing the falcons jumping out of a plane at an RAF display and just being like mesmerised by them. So then when I could get them involved in Blue Peter and get Radzi to do a Blue Peter challenge that Janet Ellis did and John Noakes did and different people did, it's just like we're doing it, but actually the way the show happens now is you can film it in such a different way. So the actual, I would say, like the quality of the cameras, you've got a quality of a camera that is about 2 inches big compared to years ago when it would be like a full-on camera person having to be in the plane and jumping out with, you know, so it's just different techniques of filming, access. So children still handwrite their letters. So we're still getting handwritten letters into the show. And that's increased from, in 2011, like 40,000 letters we were getting. This year, or so far, 118,000 letters.
Wow. And we haven't even finished... admin team to deal with that.
Yeah, so we still haven't finished the year, but they're handwritten letters from children. So kids are still handwriting something, sending us the pictures, putting a stamp on it and sending it to us. So we've got all of that going on, but now we've got a website, an All Singing, All Dancing website, which is very popular with kids, and we're like normally the number one website outside of Newsround, because Newsround's news. On CBBC, we're still like one of the top, we're still, generally speaking, the top website for CBBC. And we've got a great... you know, apps like CBC Buzz app, so we can get kids to take photos, upload them to a web, upload them to an app, send them to us, so then we can reflect them within the live show. So it's almost like technology is helping us to deliver a more up to date Blue Peter, but it's still the core elements of childhood. Because I still think when I read all the kids' letters, and I try and read as many as I get a selection every week, and I try and read them, and always talk to the team who are answering all the letters, the way children talk and the way what they're interested in, they're still interested in the things that we were interested in. It's just a different, sometimes a more modern take on things.
And how's the move to Salford changed things? I mean, I know the Blue Peter Garden is a lot bigger now than that little thing that used to be at the back of television centre.
So Petra's moved up. So we moved the statue of Petra up. And what's great about the garden in Salford is that, unlike TV Centre, and I think the redevelopment of TV Centre is lovely. Like I've gone there and seen what they've done to it, and I think it's brilliant because they've kind of opened it out and got rid of a lot of like the walls. In Salford, there's no walls. So children, grandparents, anyone can just walk to our garden.
It's open to the public,
isn't it?
So
they literally can get off the tram and they're in the Blue Peter Garden. If they go through the right gate, because there's a tiny little gate, they can be in the Italian sunken garden that was taken piece by piece from London and re-put in Manchester.
Incredible.
And we've got a new veg plot and we've got a gold badge walk. So children and parents, you can spot your famous person that has got a gold badge and take a photo by their... gold badge path stone. And it's just, I think it just gives us a new dynamic, because then when we're filming out in the Blue Peter Garden, we can have anyone, any member of the public can just turn up and watch us do a live show. And you have kids turning up, if it's some holidays and we're filming and they know we're filming, some children turn up with their parents at 10 o'clock in the morning. We're not live till 5:30, just because they want to experience Blue Peter and see it all in operation. And it's just, I think it just meant, it just means that we've got better access and our audience can just be part of Blue Peter whenever they want, which is lovely. And we grow vegetables, and it's just lovely to see, like, and if you're there, and myself and the production manager, Claudia, we often do a bit of weeding on the garden if we've got a bit of spare time. And, you know, our production secretary, she feeds the fish. So it's just, and people could then come up to you and go, are you working on Blue Peter? And then you can just say, yeah, what do you like about the show? And then you're talking to members of the public, which is what, we're all there to service, like, our licence fee payers. So it's great to be able to just talk to people who look after our content. We've got a massive bee. So in Manchester, they did this brilliant bee tour. It's, you know, like those bees where you can do, like, a treasure hunt almost. And we've got a Blue Peter bee in the middle of our garden. It's just... And you see kids going up taking selfies, because obviously children love taking selfies now. And it's just... You just spot what they're interested in, then it's a nice bit of audience research as well.
And what's the competition for Blue Peter? Because back in my day, it used to be either stay in and watch Blue Peter or play out. Whereas now, kids these days, I'm starting to sound like an old person, you know, there's so many more things that compete for your attention. Netflix, YouTube, all of these kind of things. I mean, Ofcom recently did a study that said kids are more aware of YouTube than they are of the BBC and ITV brands. Do you, you know, how do you compete there and rise to that challenge?
So I'd say with... all our competitors, yeah, back in the day, it would always be like BBC versus ITV, or, as you said, like staying in, going out and things like that. And I'll say with children nowadays, they've got more ways of watching us. So with the iPlayer, with catch-up TV and things like that. So often they have delayed viewing, which is fine. But actually, Blue Peter, we've increased our live audience by, roughly speaking, about 25%. So we've got more children watching us live than we did last year, which is great. They're watching us more on iPlayer as well. So actually we've got more children watching Blue Peter overall, which is great, because actually sometimes the audience, if, and I know this because on a lot of our letters, children might say, I can't watch Blue Peter live, but I watch it on a Friday morning with my parents, or I watch it, we save it for Friday night, or we watch it on Saturday morning. So it's lovely because we get all that feedback. So I know where kids, when kids watch it. And our competitors with like Netflix or YouTube, it's just what we have to do is we've got to, like with our competitions, I always think our competitions are an advert for Blue Peter. So if we do something big with an outside organisation, which then gets headlines, which then gets children going, wow, I could meet Steven Spielberg if I enter your Dream Big competition, or I could design the London 2017 mascot, which will be seen by millions of people at the sporting events, or I've would love to go and see the Red Arrows. I'm going to apply for your Red Arrow competition. If we can do those things where kids then go, oh, and that's Blue Peter, then the parents obviously recommend Blue Peter, but then the kids, I want kids to want to ask for it as well. So it's the competition, it's so much competition, but we still get through to a good core audience, I'd say. But it is a whole host of things that children, if they don't, and with all our extra investment, which the BBC's got for children's programmes, we're working on loads of different ways to then get that audience to go from CBeebies into CBBC and then stay with us all the way until 16, and which is very exciting, actually, because it's our kind of core mission to then pass them on to the likes of BBC Three and then BBC One and things like that. So it is the competition's out there, but I always think it's always good to have competition because it makes you always really raise your game and really think differently about things.
And how do you connect with your audience? Because they're young kids. How do you know what's working and what's not in terms of the ingredients of the mix of the programme?
Yeah. I'd say, so if you get a purple badge, it means you review the show. And so they have to answer like 10 questions about Blue Peter and what they'd want in the show, what they found the most boring. So we literally ask them, what was the best thing? So they have to review one show and then they have to go on our website and look at our website and then give us feedback. So we say, what's the most interesting thing you learned? What's the takeout? What's the thing that you would not have in the show?
So if you build up a critical mass of kids that are saying that bit's boring, you'll cut it.
Yeah. And so it's literally like that. And then I use the gut instinct that myself and the team, because I've obviously been working for the BBC and Children's for 20 years. So you've got a bit of a gut instinct, but then you kind of, with all our competitions, I'm always going, is it going to be as good as the previous competition? And I always go, just trust it. And then when the entries are coming in, you're going, oh, it's a bit slow today. And then you suddenly go, please don't let us down, children. And then suddenly you get like 10 mailbags. And you're like, we were right. Or yes, the competition's hit our kids and things. And also we've got a lovely thing called Stepping Out in BBC Children's, where we get to go and spend time with children in schools. And we just literally market test all our content. So we will go and say, we can't obviously tell them about a competition because these children might want to apply for it. But we say, do you like the BFG, or do you like, and we are like tease out things to then go, what do they really like about it? And then we spot, and then we watch them, like we played them a film which blew my mind the other day because they wanted more facts in it, and it was about CERN, and you know, like the Hadron Collider. So we were going, maybe we should pare back a few of the facts, because to talk to children when they're having their tea about dark matter and things
particle
that you can't
physics.
See and particle physics, you might go, that could be a bit too deep for the moment when they're sitting down having their fish fingers or whatever they're eating and stuff. And when we actually showed it to some children, they were like, we want more facts.
Wow.
And that blew our minds, because we were going, okay, so that means that we'll tweak it. So next time we do something big about science or engineering or whatever, we will maybe do a few more facts because we know that those children wanted them.
So what's a typical week for you then? How do you put an episode together?
So I'll start on Friday. So let's pretend the show's just happened on a Thursday. So Friday is our day where we have a team meeting and we review the show and we say what were people's highlights, lowlights, and what could we do better. And then we do team updates. And it's a really good, in a way, I like to think of the theatre of live TV. So you always want a celebration point at the end of the week, because then I want everyone to go away for the weekend going, we did a good job, well done, team. Then there could be location filming over the weekends, depending on the events and things. So the film team just works 7 days a week and they could be anywhere and the presenters could be anywhere. Then on a Monday, we do a pitching meeting.
How big's the team?
The team's about 25, and then it increases on a studio day. It could increase to like 40, 50, depending on the size of the studio and what we want to do with it. So it's a core team of like 25.
Back to Monday, sorry for interrupting.
And so then any member of the team can come and pitch to us ideas. So Monday afternoon, we have the pleasure of just sitting in a room and different members of the team come in and go, right, we're thinking of doing this idea. Are you interested? And then some ideas might be really in detail. Some might just be top lines where they just go, do you want to do something about this building? Or there's this race. Are you interested in it? And then we then decide in the producers kind of, are we going to do it? And then the team get feedback. And then the rest of the week is Tuesday's a scripting day for the studio team. Wednesday is a changes edit where all our films, the film producer, Andy, he spends time crafting the fine cuts of all the VTs. And then Thursday morning is the voiceover sessions. We do a read-through and that's studio day. And then we literally do the live show. And then we go back to Friday and it happens like that. And then myself and the series producer, Matt, we spend time across our weeks. I could be meeting contributors, meeting organisations, thinking of I try and plan the show. I always think I'm in charge of 12 to 24 months ahead because big things only happen on Blue Peter because we plan so far ahead. Then my series producer looks after from like 12 to 6 months away. And then the producers are like probably 3 months away. They get the content and then turn it around. And that's kind of how the cycle happens. So any ongoing, it's like spinning plates because you're always having to think ahead. So even on the 60th birthday day, I was still thinking, right, we've got children, we've got Christmas, we've still got to think of things for 2019,
we've
which
also
is quite
got
scary.
Thursday's show to prepare
and
for.
Thursday's show. So you kind of are really thinking ahead and then you suddenly come back to reality and then you're doing the day show. And then on a Thursday we do, so the studio days is really cool because A, I'm a live TV producer at heart, so I did that job, so I love it. So we do the read through, then the contributors arrive, then you rehearse. Things might go right, things might not go wrong, new things might come up where you go, oh, we didn't know about that, let's like focus on that, because actually that's really more interesting than what we thought might be interesting. So we do all those rehearsals, and then at 4 o'clock, they do a dress run of the show, and we still do the thing where I watch the show with the series producer, film producer, and production manager, and then we all comment, and the digital producer, we all comment on how it's looking, and then the studio producer runs in with the team. We then give them all the feedback and then they've got about normally 15 to 20 minutes to turn around all my changes. And then the show goes live. And then I stand in the gallery because I never like to sit in the gallery. I always stand in the gallery walking about and just
pacing around,
seeing the show go out.
And is it exhilarating to be on air or is it actually quite stressful? Can you, because at that point you can't undo it if it's live.
I just love it. I've had 20 years of doing live TV on and off and I'm the calmest. There was one show recently that I said that was my most nervous moment, and that was when we were doing a world record show. And for some reason, because normally
live.
I'm quite calm, because I always think I've got to be like a swan. You've got to be like really calm, because if you start panicking, that shows to the team you're nervous, you're worried about something. And when we were doing live three world records trying to break them. And obviously with world records, you always want to break them live. Like you want to break them live and you want that. Yay, like celebration, cannons going off and things like that. And for some reason, that was the most nervous I've been. And then afterwards, they were like, how was the show? And I was like, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And then I just went, I just had a really nervous fear. I hadn't had that for years. 60th birthday, I was not nervous because I trust my team so much that I just know that every member of the team. So on that day, we had such a big team because obviously it was like two studios. We had so many presenters. So many, and I just said to everyone, if every member of the team does their job really well on that day and just focus on your job as a group, we'll achieve this. So don't just focus on what you're doing. Don't worry about anything else. Just focus on what you're doing and we will make it happen. And so at that point, I was in the gallery and I just was like, brilliant. You know, in my head, I was just going, yep, that's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly what I wanted. And with live TV, if something goes wrong, that's the beauty of live TV.
Did Biddy Baxter come in for the 60th?
Yes, we had... quite a few past presenters. We had most of the past presenters. So we had the first ever presenter of Blue Peter, Leela Williams. She made it up and she was there on the first ever show.
I don't remember her.
So we had her.
That's before my time.
She was before you were born. I think, but she is so supportive. What was lovely is we had all the past presenters in the studio, as many as could make it. And they were, and such an eclectic mix.
Yeah, I saw the kind of the pictures that were released. It was incredible.
So like Lindsay and Radzi, our current presenters, had all those eyes looking at them. But what's lovely about Blue Peter presenters, because they've all done it and been there, they're very supportive of the current lot because they know how they're probably feeling.
It's like a continuum. And they,
and when you put them all in a room, they talk away and they're going, oh, so you did the Falcons and or you did skydiving or you did that story. You did, and it's just lovely because they've all got some common ground to talk about. And then we had, yeah, Biddy, Edward Barnes came up. We had every editor of Blue Peter in the room as well. So I had that pressure of going, we've got practically every person who's ever edited the show. Yeah, every editor and some key
cast. I'd have been nervous that week. Not the record-breaking week. All eyes on you.
I suddenly just had a sense of calm because I just thought, actually, whatever happens now, it's happening. We have got loads of people. Like, we're on the 1 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock news, and I was thinking, we're on the 6 o'clock news straight after the show. So if we had a bad show, that's not going to be great. But actually, it was just like, had the director general there. So we had all these people in the room watching the Philharmonic, and it just, but I just had this sense of calm after a while. I had a moment when I had two kids made me just really think about my job that day, and then I was fine. Because one just showed me all this stuff that he was so keen to show me about trying to get a Blue Peter badge and things like that. And I just was like, this is amazing. Because this kid, I gave him some feedback years ago about, maybe you could think of this, you could think of this. And he just did everything that I'd asked for. And I was like, wow, you're definitely going to earn a badge for that. And then another child in the studio audience, I walked in the studio just before live and I was going on the mic, thank you so much for coming. And it's brilliant that you're in the studio. And I'm so excited. It's going to be the best show ever. And things like that. And this one kid came up, who's like from an inner city school in Manchester, and just came up and went, excuse me, sir. And I was like, he goes, are you the boss? And I went, yeah, I am. I look after Blue Peter, because normally I don't say I'm the boss. I'm like,
it's not a very BBC thing to say, isn't it? I've watched W1A.
I was going, like, I look after Blue Peter. Yeah, yeah, I'm in charge. And he just went, thank you so much for the invite to come. I really appreciate it. And you do such a great job, and just keep doing Blue Peter.
Wow,
and that, I was like that, right. And then my researcher, Jack, was with the mic, and I just had to quickly give him the mic because I was just like, I don't want to, you know, I just needed, it just was really touching.
Where are you going to take the show over the next few years?
I think kind of 1920, so we did the 60th, and I think with all the new investment coming into children's, we've got some really exciting, like, digital, as I said to you, like, tech can really help with Blue Peter, and we can do, like, amazing things. And so I think with all the developments in tech, I would say that's going to be the exciting part, where we can bring in new ways of communicating with our audience. So I want to focus on digital, definitely. And also, I think it will probably be time to bring in, it could be bringing in new pets into the show, because we've had Iggy, our guide dog, and Iggy's now with a guy that is now gone to uni because of our guide dog, which is brilliant. And we've got a tortoise called Shelley. But I do think I am missing, like, pitter-patter of maybe pets. So I think maybe we might bring that back in. And then presenters, I think.
And are they in the office when you're off air? How does it work? You don't put them in a cage, do you?
No, so people look after them. So either it's the presenter, so Helen Skelton, she had Barney the dog, and it was her dog.
It was literally her dog, wow.
Her dog, and so she'd walk around with it, and it'd be in the office when it needed to be, and it'd have its own ID and things like that, which is
That's
cute.
Amazing.
So the Blue Peter dogs normally can get through security, which is great. So I think kind of that area, I think challenges, we still want to do challenges. I might think of how we can supersize appeals and, like, we support children in need and sport relief and comic relief, but just thinking of different ways of doing it. Because I said to the team, I'm doing currently planning 1920, and I've got a big list of things that I want to kind of shake up and go, OK, what else can we do with this? Because I always say to the teams, every item of Blue Peter, we've got to have a go, have a laugh, because actually if you don't laugh about stuff, then it's not entertaining. It's not, you don't want to watch it, or you don't want to even work on it. And then think big. And so that's our key things. And we're going to do that with, like, the book awards, with everything. Just think, okay, we've now hit six, we've gone past 60, but what else could we do? Because I think actually this is the exciting time, because we've kind of reached that milestone now that the show can go on and on and on. And we've got an audience that is increasing, and we've got more kids wanting their badges and stuff. So it's like trying to think of the next big thing. And I have had some really good meetings recently that I can't share with you, but those will take the show into the next level again.
And what are the trends in terms of how kids access the programme? Because you mentioned there the growth of Catch Up on iPlayer. You mentioned you're the second best performing website after Newsround. You know, will there come a time when there won't be a live show, say 10, 20 years from now, and then people will watch it online and it'll be recorded? Where do you think it'll be, say, 20 years from now?
I think that's an interesting point, because years ago I loved Saturday Night TV, and in my head it was like that was the big night, and you always wanted live TV. And it went through the sunnier period where it was all pre-recorded shows and there wasn't that live element. And then suddenly Strictly comes back and boom, it's Strictly, X Factor, and suddenly live TV's back.
Ant and Dec has to be
Ant
live.
Ant and Dec, you know, like, it's those kind of moments. And so I think there is a certain energy from a show when you do it live. And I think our audience, what's lovely is you can go, this is live right now, and then we get letters by Tuesday talking about the live show that we had on Thursday. So if we say we need lots of people to send us in a picture of Shelley R. Tortoise by Tuesday because we need this, that and the other, we will get it by Tuesday. And so I think that live moment would be a loss to Blue Peter, I would say. But there's other ways of doing it. So it could be like a, you know, like live radio, podcast, things like that. I think there could be different ways of us accessing and making that live feeling. But I think under my tenure, I'd like to try and keep the live as much as possible, just because I think that audience interaction, it just makes it that bit more special compared to the sea, like compared to the sea of content they can access. If suddenly we go, this is live and you can get in touch with us now, that makes us set apart from our competition. It's almost like a USP in a marketing way that you talk.
And is there a strong educational element to the show? I mean, the kids these days still want to be shown how to make things, the old sticky pack plastic type thing, or is it much more, as you said, vlogger-oriented, celebrities, you know, pop culture, that kind of thing? Or is it the kind of mix that I would recognise from my own childhood?
Yeah, I'd say it's still the mix from your own childhood. And what's great is that, yes, we might have a vlogger in doing a make, or like we had Anne-Marie, a pop star, coming in to do our Christmas cards, and she made our Christmas cards and she just loved doing that.
I don't know who she is. That just shows how old I am. I imagine and, young people would know. I genuinely don't know who she is.
And so it's that kind of thing of they still access our content in a way, and they still want to know how to, like the Christmas card is still an iconic bit of Blue Peter's year that children are waiting to give their teachers Christmas cards, but they want to use the Blue Peter one. And so it's just those moments still happen. I think it's just, yeah, children still, as I said before, like children are still children and they still love to make, bake. You know, like we, for Children in Need, we've done some like Pudsey cakes and kids are loving that because we've seen it, the interaction when they're writing back to us and taking photos and things like that. So I think it is, yeah, it's just a mix. And that's the beauty, like Biddy Bax always says to me, a magazine show can cover anything. So we can do educational content. So with CERN, as I said, with the Hadron Collider, it's like that's a very heavy scientific film. And when we showed it to children, they wanted even more facts. And we've done a recent competition called Lights, Camera, Action, where a child, like our winner, is going to engineer a pop music video. So that is showing engineering skills, like sound engineers, lighting engineers, camera engineers. So we're not saying this is an engineering film, but we're actually showing it in a way that it's almost like you're learning just by being entertained. And that's the best way, I think, children learn, because then they go, did you see that? That job, I might want that job in the future. Or, you know, our design a dragon competition, that was taking a building, a historic building, where a child then designed a gargoyle dragon to be put on place. First time Historic England have allowed it to go on, like, the Great Pagoda at Kew Gardens. And so that's teaching kids about history, architecture, and if they want to be a new architect. And the actual chief architect of historical palaces was a Blue Peter viewer who loved York Minster Boss competition many years ago. And when I met him, that inspired him to go and do his career. So it's almost like education, but without realising it.
And you're a well-known advocate for children's literacy. I mean, you've been a judge on the Blue Peter Book Awards. Tell us about that.
And the Book Awards are a highlight of my year, although it's the most intensive time. And actually, in the lead up to the 60th, so if you think it's October time, I got 20 books, I think 20 books sent to me to read from the end of August all the way through September to then judge the first week of October, just before the 60th. So,
as well as putting on the programme and the 60th.
And doing all that. So I read all the books, because then I feel like...
A lot of coffee was drunk during that period, I imagine.
Yeah, normally what I do, Paul, is I normally get up very early in the morning and then have like a coffee or a tea and then just try and read a children's book before I go to work. And that's how I do it.
Wow.
And I think...
Must be a quick reader then.
I am. I've got the art of fast reading down to a T. And I do think that our book awards are so important to children and parents, because it is that stamp of approval of like, this is a good book. And our judges this year were brilliant. And we actually brought in a vlogger like Louise Pennon, who's a big vlogger, kind of with a massive audience on YouTube and social media and things like that. And it's brilliant because she's a mum, and so she's reading it from that perspective. We had Alex T. Smith, who was an author, so we always try and have like someone who's kind of a parent, someone who's an author, someone from industry, and it just then works in a judging panel. And it is a really good, and we work with book trust on it. So they're an independent charity that help us manage the books, book awards. And just then when we announce the winners on World Book Day, it's just really exciting. And the best thing I think about the book awards is we've got 12 schools that then we give. So when we do the shortlist of our top three in each category for best book of facts and best story, we then give it to children to decide the winners. And so children who are from a wide ranging schools across the UK, they all apply for it. And this year we had, I think it was over 600 schools apply, and only 12 actually get the gig. And then they, all the children get books, they get to take them home, they get to read them, they get to keep them, and then they get to judge them. And I think that, and they get a Blue Peter badge for doing it as well. And I think that to children that may not have that chance in life to do it, that gives them real ownership and pride in what they've done, and they're judging our book awards, and then they all get to vote, and then I don't know who wins until like February time, and then we announce it on World Book Day, which is all like one of the most exciting days for books, because every child loves World Book Day. And so it's just, it's another part of Blue Peter where you just think this is great. And it, when I go into a bookshop, I do love seeing the little sticker of like Blue Peter Book Award shortlist, because you just think that's great. It's good advertising as well for the show.
Absolutely. And great for the book as well, frankly, to have that sticker on it.
Yeah. I think publishers are quite happy when the kids vote for them, because actually then it gives them a real sense of achievement, because they think this is voted by the audience, which is brilliant.
How do you find your presenters? I mean, if I wanted to be the next presenter of Blue Peter, how do you do that? Because in a sense, it's quite a special talent to be able to present Blue Peter. It's much different from merely, I say, presenting to adults.
Yeah, you have to have lots of aspects to your character to present on Blue Peter, because you've got to be really up for a challenge and be generally interested in everything. So you've got to say, okay, so I might be jumping out of a plane one day. The next day I might be judging the book awards or reading books. Then I might be going to CERN and talking particle physics, or then I might be doing this. So you have to have an interest, a genuine interest in everything, and ask
those questions. This sounds like the best job in the world so far.
Which is brilliant. Then you have to be good at live TV, which is an art, because actually live broadcasting, we don't have auto cue, so the script is written, they read it, they kind of memorise it, but then obviously live TV, they have to be flexible with it. So they never have auto cue, which I think is brilliant, because then it means they're talking in their own authentic voice. And then you have to be live TV, and then the film content, you just have to then be physically strong enough to do the challenges.
Because actually, the actual stamina needed.
Yeah. So when Radzi did jumping out of the plane with the RAF Falcons, he had to be physically strong enough and have the memory, I think he called it memory muscle or something like that, way, like how to jump out of the plane. He had to really memorise it. And so you just had to have that strength and that core ability. And then he did like gymnastic challenge, and he was actually training with people who train Olympic athletes to do this training. And he had to retrain his body in different ways to make that happen. And that was 4 months work. And that's a lot of it's not filmed. So he's just going to a place to learn. Like Lindsay's done a swim run challenge. She's been swimming for literally months and months and months. And that's what you don't see, but you still have to do it. So you've got that, you have to have that real commitment. And then also, whenever you're anywhere in the country, you just have to always think you're representing Blue Peter and you have kids coming up. And what's lovely is when you are with a Blue Peter presenter, our production team, you always spot like children going, that's like Radzi or that's Lindsay. And then you have to be that nice person to go, I think there's someone over there that wants your autograph or wants to talk to you about it. And so we always engage with our audience wherever we are. And they're brilliant ambassadors. Like Lindsay and Radzi are just amazing because they just genuinely love kids. So Lindsay got her job entering a competition where we did a search for Blue Peter presenter called You Decide, and kids voted in their tens of thousands for Lindsay to get her job out of three top finalists. So Lindsay had that boost, I'd say, that I said to her, look, you've been picked by children, so that's brilliant. And then Radzi got his job because I got his showreel many, many years ago when I was working as head of presentation. So I dealt with loads of showreels then. There was something about him that I just, and it is just that, and it, dare I say, like Simon Cowell, that X factor, there's just something, when you watch something, you just go, that person's
there's
interesting.
There's a spark.
And it just makes you sit forward and go, oh, what is it about him that I'm interested in? Then I look after the Edinburgh International TV Festival, a thing called The Network, which is a talent scheme for people who want to break into the industry. So I look after the live TV side of that. And he was actually one of the delegates. So I'd seen his showreel. Then a couple of months later, I'd sent him an email going, I'll pass it on to the Blue Peter editor at the time. And then I met him in Edinburgh again, thought, there's just something, because I've dealt with so many presenters in my life that it's just like, yeah, he's interesting. And then through the network, you get to do a work placement. And out of all the thousands of people that apply for it, he got it. I wasn't on the judging panel at that point. So he then joined my team presentation. And then from that, he got the Natural History Unit, did a show called Wild. And they asked me to recommend anyone that they thought, because they're having trouble finding a third person. And they described this person. I went, I've got someone for you. So I took him. I took them to meet Radzi in our birthday card room, because at CBeebies we have loads of birthday cards. And he was sorting out the birthdays. Took these producers in, said to Radzi, oh, I've got some people I want to introduce you to. And he went, do you want tea, coffee? Do you want, because he just thought I was introducing, because he was a runner at the time, like to give him tea and coffee. And I was like, no, they want to meet you. Then they were so impressed with him, they gave him a job on Wild. And then he did that for the summer. Then Helen Skelton left Blue Peter. So I was waiting, Helen Skelton left and Lindsay joined. So I was waiting to find out from the competition, was it going to be a guy or a girl that got that job? And Lindsay got the job. And so then I just went, there's one guy on my hit list that I want to join. And so then one Monday afternoon, I invited Radzi in, just, and he thought it was just for a casual chat, talking about general life and things like that. And then I just said to him, with a controller, Cheryl Taylor, we want you to be the 37th Blue Peter presenter. And his face just literally just went, like, dropped. And he was like, is that real? And I went, yep. And he goes, I can't. And he just was so, because he'd always wanted to do it. And I knew that he'd be good at it. And he's proved me right, because he's proven me right and some, because actually Lindsay and Radzi, they're just amazing. And they are kind of that, every generation, I just think there'll be some children in 20 years' time who've probably got my job, or like the next editor who's out there somewhere will be like, I remember Lindsay and Radzi and things like that. And so it's great. It's a very good, I'd say, like, it's a brilliant job to cut your teeth on. And when all the past presenters, they've all said it was their best job. And I know they'd obviously flatter me in that way, but genuinely, they just went, their life experience. Helen Skelton always goes, it's almost like you've had your life times five in the short period of time you have, just because you are doing all these amazing things.
You mentioned there that before Blue Peter, you were head of presentation at BBC Children's. What did that job involve?
So it involved looking after the channel. So basically any gap between the shows, it's filled with trails.
So and that's then, CBBC and
CBBC. CBBC and CBeebies, and then all the red button content. So I was in charge of like bedtime stories. And for CBeebies, the CBeebies house, where they do makes and kind of link between the shows, and they are the faces of the channel. And then with CBBC, it was looking after Hack of the Dog, and Ian Sterling is now on Love Island, and bringing new presenters in, and just basically making sure the channel's always TX'd or transmitted. And then looking after red button content, and like it was a brilliant, it really cut my teeth on being, it was the first executive producer kind of role I got of senior managers. And it really did cut my teeth, because I was actually in charge of the move of presentation from London to Manchester. So it taught me a lot about how to run a team and what to do and what not to do. So you learn a lot. And then also what makes people tick, because that move to Manchester, it was like literally turn the lights out on a Friday, we turn the lights on a Monday. In a new studio, all of us are working on the transition. All of us have either moved houses. So you're dealing with all the personal stuff together with your team's personal stuff, together with actually on screen getting things happening. And it was like a really interesting time. And I'd say, like, you just learned so much. And actually you thought, actually, I'm quite resilient at times, because you were just dealing with so many different things.
Did you always want to work in telly?
Yeah. And I can tell you that because my grandma always said that all the grandchildren played with Lego in different ways. And because I'm talking to your podcast, I can mention brands, which is lovely, because the BBC never can mention brands. And I used to build TV studios and do, like, TV shows.
That's pretty TV-centric.
And it is just, and they just always, as a young kid, I just was obsessed with telly, because I just think that coloured box in the corner of the room was my kind of, wow, there's a whole world out there, and isn't it exciting? And then I said this recently when I was giving a talk to some students, that BBC at that time, you could only do work experience when you were 16. And so I'd found out, well, my dad had found out that, because none of my family are in TV, so completely no one in my school, there's only one other person who went into TV in my school. So we were all from completely different backgrounds. And so on my 16th birthday, I spent an afternoon, as soon as I got in from school, phoning the BBC switchboard, working my way around, everyone going, no, we haven't got any work experience, haven't got any work experience. And I got through to one person called Thelma Gerser. I don't know if she's out there, I don't even know if she listens to this podcast, but she gave me work experience on BBC News, because she went, oh, someone's just pulled out, do you want work experience next week? And I went, yes, I'll take it. And just said that as a 16-year-old. Went to school the next day and went to my form tutor. I've got work experience at the BBC next week in London. Can I go? And she, bless her, was very supportive, Mrs. Beasley. And she just went, right, I've got to go to the head teacher. Took me to the head teacher. They signed it off. And then as a 16-year-old, I just was going to Central London, into TV Centre. Then at the end of that week, I remember walking out and going, I'm coming back to this place, just in my head, because it was just such a magical, like TV Centre was a magical building. I'd seen it on Saturday mornings and all of, and like Blue Peter and all the, like Noel's House Party, all those shows.
Iconic.
And then I went to uni. And then,
so you knew TV was for you at that point?
Yeah. And I just loved it. And just the thought of working on it, you just walked into TV studio and it was like, wow, look at this. This is, you just felt natural. And then went to uni, did a media studies course. And then in between the summer holiday, did a placement at BBC Children's that I got after writing a letter. And the rest, then I left uni early because I was offered a job as a runner on Chuckle Vision.
And Chuckle I just thought, Vision, wow.
To tell my university lecturer, I'm going to go and work on Chuckle Vision as a T-boy, is that all right? They were like, I said, I'll still do my finals, I'll still do my projects, I just need to, this is my break. And then that is where it started.
Was Children's the way forward even then at that point?
Yeah.
Because you've done it for 20 odd years, haven't you?
Because I think, so I've worked in entertainment development, I've worked in marketing and things like that, but I think there must be something about my brain. I still think like a child. And most people in children's TV, you still got that awe about the world where you ask, I just ask so many questions all the time because I just want to find out, like, how does that work or what does that do? Or, and I think it's just, and the magic of children is that when you say to them, is this any good? And they go, no. Like, oh my God, children, or my niece and nephew, when they used to watch Blue Peter, we go, we didn't like that, but we like that. And I'll be like, why? And then you just interrogate it. And you just have to work harder because you're not the audience. And that's what's great, because otherwise you could be, if you're working for other things, you could sit back and go, yeah, I know what it's like because I actually watch this show. Whereas actually we have to work that bit harder. So it just keeps your brain ticking over. And it is just when you've got children in the audience coming in, or you read a letter, or you see a bit of feedback from a child, you just think that's why we do our job.
And if it's not too personal a question, what would you do next? Because you've been in children's telly for 20 years. Being the editor of Blue Peter is presumably the best job there is in children's telly. And if I were you, I would, you know, fight off any oncomers that would want to prize you out of the editor's chair. But, you know, do you have any designs on, you know, what might be next? What does the editor of Blue Peter do next?
Well, funny, so I've spoken to all the past editors and what they do. And so, like, the previous one to me, he went to go and work at Five Live to go back to his, like, journalistic roots. Other ones set up companies. Other ones were kind of consultants for different people. Because in my job at the moment, I meet such an eclectic mix of different people from different organisations, different backgrounds, even everything. And so, in a way, it's like a chocolate box of, oh, that job might be quite interesting. That might be. Like, who knows where I might end up. And currently, I don't want to leave my job. And everyone thought 60th birthday, the next day I'd be like, right, I'm off. But I want to stay there because there's some other projects which are for 2019, end of 2019, that are too exciting. You know, like suddenly my hunger's there again where I'm going, oh, I want to stay there just for that little bit. But I do know that I've got to leave at some point so I can hand over to someone else to give this lovely job. Because I think Biddy did a great job. I don't think I could do this job for 26 years that she did it.
She did it for 26 years. No wonder her name's so recognisable and iconic.
And most editors do about four years. I've done, it'll be my sixth, going into my sixth year in January. So I think it's that kind of thing but I just fundamentally love it. Unless there's another opportunity where I go, oh, I've never, because in a way I think to myself, right, I've reached this peak of in children's broadcasting. Maybe I should just start at the bottom again and work in a completely different career and work my way up again, just for something that's interesting that will use my skills from this job, but in a completely different way. But who knows?
Do you consult with Biddy Baxter? I don't know why, but imagery was conjured up then of like The Godfather, where Marlon Brando would show, you know, Al Pacino, Don Corleone would show his son how to run the mafia empire as the elder statesman, as it were. Do you go to Biddy and say, you know, I mean, 26 years is a long time, a lot of experience there.
Yeah, so all the past editors, like, I respect them kind of big time, because actually until you've done the job, people can say, oh, well, they did it this way, but they haven't done it. As in, but the editors have done it and they've been in my position. And what's interesting when you talk to all of them is all of them have experienced the same things that I experienced today, that happened to Biddy, that happened to Oliver McFarlane, that happened to Lewis Bronze, that happened to Steve Hocking or Richard Marsden or Jennifer, like everyone has experienced the same things that I've experienced. So it's quite good in a way, because then you think, oh, it's not just me when you're really pushing for something and a door might be just shutting. Because you still have to work really hard on Blue Peter to get through doors of things, because people always go, oh, you just phone them up and you're in. You phone them up and they'll listen to you, but you're not in. You've got to then work to get into, like when I got the first ever TV cameras into MI5, you know, like, that took a lot of effort and a lot of planning and a lot of checking in with them for them to give us permission. And so it's like you're still having to work hard and things like that. And whenever I see Biddy and Edward Barnes, what's lovely is they never tell me what to do, because they go, you're in charge of the show. Like everyone has always said, you're in charge of the show. We're not going to, but you can just, you hear their stories and you go, oh, that's how they dealt with that type of thing. And then you go, oh, that could be useful. And so it's just those, it's like those nuggets of information that you just can go, oh yeah, that's, I'll take that, just because that's a good way of managing that scenario. But, and what's great is when they watch a show and their feedback at the 60th, it was just lovely, because I was sitting next to Biddy kind of later on that evening, and they were just talking to me, and it just was like brilliant. It's just like, we're a good family. And once you're in the Blue Peter family, you might have your disagreements, you might have your moments, but deep down you're still the family that sticks together, which is lovely.
Have you ever fancied going airside, as it were? I mean, you'd make a great presenter.
I think I've got the most boring voice in the world. And I said this to someone this weekend. I was like, oh, I'm doing this podcast on Tuesday. I've got such a boring voice. Like, how am I going to get over it? Because when I used to be on talk...
I'm not sure I agree.
No, so when I used to be on talk back to the presenters in their ears, so I was in Helen Skelton's ear and in loads of presenters' ears over the time, they always used to say, Ewan, if nuclear war broke out, we'd love you to tell us, because you've just got that kind
that
of...
That calming
voice. And but I've never, ever thought about being a presenter. Like when you're junior, you do have to stand in for guests and like stand in for guests and chat and do all that kind of thing. But I just think I'm just not that. I just don't like presenting. I don't mind talking about passionate topics, and I don't mind talking to a crowd and things like that. That's all fine. I don't know if I could ever deal with the looking at a camera and going, oh, that's a bit weird, because I'm just talking to you now. It's like I'm talking to a person.
Yeah, I'm literally a person.
I tell all my presenters, it's easy. Just talk like it's a person. You're there.
It's difficult
you're doing
when it's
that.
Just a lens.
But it is just that cold lens. But who knows? I might suddenly just find my presenting skills. You never know.
It's been a hugely enjoyable podcast. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
A Right Angles podcast in association with Big Things Media.